Welcome, reanimated fans, to this week's podcast. We had to take a pause due to some outside conflicts, trials, tribulations, pollen. But in any case, we're back now, and we are here to chat today about the movie Abigail. And I am here, as always, with my intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin. Hello, Stuart.
Yo!
And I'm AP Conrad, for those of you who don't know, but you probably know I just dive in without any kind of introduction. To my self-introduction. But anyway, talking about Abigail, the child vampire movie. But before we get to that, we actually have quite a few little news items. And I just realized there was something that I wanted to talk to you about, Stuart, and I forgot to add it in, which is Fallout. I've been hearing things, so maybe we should throw that on the list.
I've seen most of it. Yeah, we can talk about it.
Okay. We don't have to talk about much. I'm just putting it out there because I keep getting people sending me links and things like that. So okay. Thought it'd be worth at least addressing or just, you know, gently talking about. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
But few news items. There's quite a few things in production or soon to be in production. And Joe Manganiello.
Manganiello.
Manganiello is now set to produce and star in Mountain Man, which is a series that I have not read or familiar with, but I think you have, Stuart.
I just started reading it after I saw this headline, actually, because this news dropped. This news dropped like a week ago, give or take, and so I picked up the book because I just so happened to finish my book that I was reading, and so I was like, oh, let me try this out, Mountain Man by Keith Blackmore, and it's I'm only like three chapters in, I think, so far, and so far it's fairly interesting. It's set like a couple years after the zombie apocalypse, and it follows a guy who has survived so far. And we'll see where it takes us from here. It's set in Canada, and as it sounds, he's like lives on a mountain near a city. And so Joe Manganiello being cast, I feel like I've already met the character that he's going to play in the film, just based on his physicality. Big dude,
yep.
Kind of an antagonist, it seems like.
Yeah, he plays these kinds of characters. I mean, he played a werewolf in True Blood.
Yep.
He's definitely like this kind of a character that I could, again, not knowing much about the story, but I could totally see him playing into this based on what I have read. And the person who's directing this script is John Lee. And then Nick and Joe Manganiello are producing this. And so the one thing I thought was very funny about this article is that, you know, Joe and Nick basically said about John Lee that he was a brilliant mind and they've been looking for something to work with him on since Pee-wee's Big Holiday. So that just made me laugh. Just, it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Everybody seems pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
So.
I want something good to happen for Joe Manganiello because, you know, he and Sofia Vergara broke up, which was a moment of sadness, I think, for everybody. I'm kidding, but you know, also going through a divorce is tough. Nope. And he was trying to get Dragonlance Chronicles off the ground, a live action series of D&D for TV, and I think Hasbro axed it, or Wizards of the Coast, or somebody. And he's a big nerd who really wanted to make that show, was my understanding. And so I want him to have good things for some reason. I don't know why I'm invested in Joe Manganiello's happiness, but I am.
I kind of like him, and he is a super nerd, which I really love. And I don't know if you have watched Mythic Quest. Have you ever watched that show?
I have. Wait, does he have a cameo in that?
He does. And it's all about him starring in the sort of, he's supposed to be, like playing Ian, I guess, in whatever movie they're doing about his biopic or whatever it is. And there's just like a whole storyline with him that is kind of hilarious. And so it's good to see him in these kinds of things. And I hope this turns out to be fun. It seems like it might be, so I can't wait to see whatever happens with this, but looking forward to talking about that with you down the line.
Yeah. But I think we're a ways out for that.
We are, but it's exciting to talk about anyway.
True. So Joe Manganiello's Mountain Man coming, I don't know, in a couple of years, maybe. We'll see. We'll tell you when we hear more.
All right.
Then Taunton, Massachusetts had some exciting activity a couple weeks ago.
Curiosity, have you ever been to this town? Because I have.
I have not. I didn't get much out of Boston when we were both denizens of that city.
Well, this town, I'm really psyched for them that they have something going on. I will say that it's one of those towns that just has, like, you know, there's like a mill or other stuff and like things. I'm really excited for them that they have this going on. I did.
When
love
you say
that.
A mill, you mean like they have industry that has long since ceased to function?
Yeah, that has ceased to operate. I mean, they do. You know, and so the fact that this is kind of a fun thing going on, I'm psyched for them. But the headline of this is that they talk to a zombie and a caterer or something like that, which I thought was really funny.
The caterer really does have some interesting things to say for this newspaper article.
Yeah,
like just in how like this industry operates, and it's wild.
Right, and we should say that this is filming Dead City, which is the Walking Dead spinoff. And you know, I could see like the town kind of getting into this. So I always love a good story like this where people are really psyched about these kinds of projects. And again, it's nice when you have a production like this that can that people can be involved in, and it's sort of fun. So anyway, I liked it.
So they shot in two locations in Taunton. Mm-hmm. One was also like an old silversmith manufacturing site, as well as the mill. But I guess the silversmith will be the interior shots of the exterior stuff that they were shooting over at the mill. And you know what was kind of also interesting about this is they had a lot of extras. There's a photo in this article of people dressed up in like Civil War garb, like including blue coats and gray coats.
Yeah, I
saw that. With little caps and bandoliers of ammunition. And they do look kind of old school. So I wonder where is Dead City going with this? You know, like.
Yeah, so.
That's kind of weird. And then finally for me, if you're not final, the caterer. Dude, Alan Mork, drove his fleet of food trucks from LA to feed the cast and crew on this show. And I think he said he was going to be gone from home for like months. That's just crazy.
Yeah, because also there's food trucks, as we know, in Massachusetts.
So all over the place. Why would
all
they?
All over the place. And that seemed a little weird.
That's just bananas. But I'm sure it was good food, and maybe, you know, who knows? I don't get that at all. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm sure you can find somebody local, but maybe it's, I don't know, a union thing, or I don't know, who knows?
Or maybe somebody was like really, really into those particular food trucks.
If I don't get my breakfast burrito from GP Catering, I can't function. Okay, well, that's Taunton's Daily Gazette article about the Dead City was filming there last week. I think they're probably done by now already.
Yeah, I would imagine they are.
They just filmed there for 3 days, rolled in, rolled out. Quite interesting. Then next up, we had a bloody disgusting article about a film that they are putting on Screambox, which is kind of bloody disgusting streaming platform. A Turkish zombie film, which we have not.
No, we've not encountered. So, but
I'm one of these
opportunity zombie film aficionado. I'm psyched to watch this, and this is sort of a love story, I guess.
It's called The Funeral, and they acquired it. It says out of the Berlin International Film Festival, for North America, with plans to release across all platforms this fall. So actually not coming anytime soon, but in about 6 months, maybe we'll get a look at this with Ahmet Rifat Sungar as a hearse driver who opens the back door of the hearse to find a dead girl making strange grunting noises. Immediately captivated by her beauty, he falls in love. Not the beginning of every zombie movie you've ever heard of.
I think it'll be a little bit of an interesting review. So. And speaking of other interesting things, the casting for 28 Years Later continues. I'm very excited. We've got like sir so, really like a star-studded cast, but I'm particularly excited about Jodie Comer being in this. So she's pretty good. For those of you who have seen Killing Eve, apparently Stuart has not. Stuart,
Never
what
seen it.
I don't understand what you're doing with your life.
Been reading Mountain Man, but I guess.
Well, I'm just saying, just check out at least season one of Killing Eve. It's really great. But in addition to Jodie, Ralph Fiennes and Aaron Taylor Johnson have also both been attached to this.
Doesn't
So,
he pronounce his name Rafe?
sorry, Rafe? Really?
So.
Are you sure? The L is silent?
And the A is long.
Are you sure?
Here's Lad Bible article from last year. Ralph Fiennes had major regrets over not addressing how his name is spelled and pronounced. Let's blah blah blah. You see, the Harry Potter actor's first name isn't pronounced the way Ralph usually is. Ralph Rafe, in his case, is not pronounced. Okay, blah 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 blah. It's pronounced similarly to the actor Rafe Spalls. Yeah, I don't know how you didn't know this. Apparently, you've been too busy
I
watching
didn't.
Killing Eve to
I guess I just
follow.
as always. I guess I've always seen it spelled. I guess I've never seen it spelled as. Oh,
Well, it's
anyway.
spelled Ralph, but it's pronounced Rafe. And why do I know that? I have no idea.
I guess you know what? I've probably been calling him Ray Fiennes and just not realized that this was.
Thinking that it was like, yeah, he shortens Ralph to Ray. And then when you pronounce it with, when you say it with his last name, it comes out correct, but it's Rafe Fiennes.
Anyway, sorry about that. Things you
But
learn. The more you know.
the more you know. Woo doo doo. He's great. His brother is great. Joseph Fiennes, but it's pronounced Yay Fiennes. And then the other guy, Aaron Taylor Taylor Johnson, was really good in what's he did that superhero movie with the cursing?
Oh, yeah. It's been a bunch of stuff.
And he was in Godzilla.
But he's very much like in that sort of like big kind of box office monster movie genre. Like he's been in, but in a ton of stuff. But also, oh, obviously, Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass, that's the one I was. Yeah,
That's
thank
the
you.
one.
But then he was like a kid in Kick-Ass, and then
Yeah,
in
he's a kid, but he's in like Age of Ultron and like all that kind of stuff.
right, was he Quicksilver or whatever?
He was Quicksilver. So, anyway, but also a really cool little casting. So really excited about that. He's also going to be in I think Nosferatu or a production of Nosferatu that's like
What?
currently upcoming. I don't know when that's due to be released, but that's got like Bill Skarsgård in it.
Oh,
So,
yeah, that dude's in everything now.
but I don't know if that's I don't know when that's been in development for a really long time, so I'm just not sure when it actually will be released. It's supposedly this year at some point, but I think this is one of those films that's been kind of like in production, out of production. Who knows what's happening with it? So I'll believe it when I see it.
Set to be released theatrically on Christmas Day, 2024.
You know what? You know it says Christmas, not Toronto.
Yeah.
Nosferatu and Christmas, synonymous, but with each other. In any case, pretty amazing cast that they're lining up for this. So I'm excited about this. This
And
is
the
like
hype machine keeps
going,
plugging away.
right?
We're going to be on the edge of our seats for 2 years straight by the time this movie comes out.
I know,
That's
right?
crazy.
And then in other creepy news, this was just like a Newsweek article about a grave that was discovered. And this is one of those I don't know if you that gets like the they've discovered some of these graves like over like Eastern Europe and other things. And basically the tradition was to put like a big rock on top of a corpse for the fear of that it would come back to life. And they found one of these graves. I'm always like, when these kinds of things happen, I'm like, but why are you like messing with that? I don't know that I'd mess with that. Like, this is the start of every good horror film. But in any case, it was just kind of interesting that that's something that they're like, you know what? We're gonna report on this, and just make sure people know what's going to happen. And actually, this one was actually found in central Germany, so I should say that that's a little different. And I think that the reason why they reported on this is that this is probably one of the earliest examples that they have found thus far. I have not heard of this particular phenomenon, but it's called the Bell Beaker phenomenon. So it's something that persisted apparently for a really long time in Europe. And this idea of like kind of burying remains like this so that they cannot get out.
What I don't understand about this description, he's found in a crouched position with a large stone
Yeah, exactly. So
over
I
his legs. So was he standing up or is
there,
he fetal?
there's a usually they're like they position them in this way. Apparently, that's what they found.
The way that that's described makes it sound like he was trying to get up, which is kind of
Well,
scary.
maybe they're trying to imply that, but essentially they're like, this is proof that we know we also this is more proof that the Stone Age people were really afraid of revenants. And the thing is that look, this is one of those things where, and we know that whole idea where there was sort of like the alarm bell, like because like people would die of plague and other things, and maybe they were unconscious but not actually dead, and they were buried in that way, and that's like it sort of feeds upon people's worst fears. I would say generally things like this it happen when people maybe something like that similarly happened. There was like some kind of a plague or whatever, and people weren't necessarily dead before they were buried, and thus these kinds of legends kind of came out of it, and this fear of death or people coming back to life. But it's been around a while, I guess is the point. Zombie fear, it's been there. It's ingrained into our psyches, apparently.
At least 4,500 years.
At least for 4,500 years or so ago.
I'd never heard of Bell Beaker phenomenon before, but that's kind of
So I
wild. But an
have
entire culture was basically named for a pot.
I feel like this is something I have heard, but like didn't really register what it was supposed to be about, I guess. But I do like how they throw this around the article as if it's sort of like a well-known thing that we all know about, which like okay, Bell Beaker phenomenon. So anyway,
It's just a really awkward name for a culture or for like a.
it's the Bell Beaker culture.
There you go.
I feel like anytime you see something like this, there's some kind of a film or horror film that might come out of it at some point. So, I can already see it. Lastly, Interview with a Vampire.
Not quite lastly, because we have Fallout TV on our list too. But
Oh,
yeah,
I forgot that too.
Interview with a Vampire Season 2. Premieres May 12 coming up soon. We're gonna go to France, or maybe we were already there when the last season ended. I think we had just met what's his name? Antonio Banderas. What was his name?
Yes, Armand, the vampire.
Armand. Armand.
But
We had
not
just
played
met
by
him.
Antonio Banderas
No.
in this
Now
film.
that made no sense on any level. And
Nope.
not that the guy that they have playing Armand makes sense here either, because he's a child in the novels, but that would be a really hard thing to play. We know playing child vampires is tough, as we're going to see, or
Yes, in our.
not in Abigail, was we're about to talk about.
You know what I would like to see in this season, since they're in France, I would like to see a crossover episode with The Walking Dead and Daryl Dixon.
Yeah.
I think if you've got, Daryl and Carol just, making some kind of a weird cameo or vice versa. I
Is
don't.
background actors in period costume?
Why wouldn't they capitalize upon this? This is the like just an opportunity you probably shouldn't miss. Just
Yeah.
saying. But anyway, very excited to see that, and we'll definitely be talking about that as it rolls out. So,
Yeah. Yeah. We're very much excited. And then Fallout. So,
yes.
H.A. Conrad. Fallout is a video game series and like an RPG at this point, too. And it's kind of. It's definitely blown up. It's now a TV show on Amazon, made by one of the Nolans. Forget which one. Not the one who made Oppenheimer.
It's not Christopher Nolan, no.
No. And it does have a race of un sort of undead, not really, called ghouls. And in the video game, you can run into feral ghouls who will attack you. And there are feral ghouls represented in this show too. And one of the main characters of this particular story on the show is called The Ghoul, played by Walton Goggins, the great Walton Goggins. But he is not feral. At least he wasn't in the episodes that I've seen. I have not yet finished the show. But I will, I would say the grain of salt that I would bring to this is that it is not sufficiently undead or canonically zombie for us to necessarily talk about. There's one episode where there are some feral ghouls. It's all over pretty quickly.
Does it, you know, so I have not played the game and I have not yet watched this, but a lot of people have been emailing me and texting me about it and asking if I've watched it. And some of the things that people are describing make me, and I, because I have not actually seen this, so it's a little bit unfair of me to comment, but some of these things they're describing sound a little bit like the Wool series, but maybe not.
Oh, yeah, maybe. There's probably some shared DNA there, because people do live in vaults underground for hundreds of, or at least, if not hundreds of years, then at least many years, many generations.
So, or the Silo series, I guess it is
but
called.
But usually the story is about leaving the vault and going above ground. Like, that's kind of the meat of a Fallout story. And the ghouls, I should mention, are mostly like, have been twisted by radiation.
Okay. So
more
there's
than anything
that.
Else. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think you can catch ghoulishness. I think it's something that happens. I don't know, though, for sure. So I shouldn't speak out of turn, but I
and
don't think you can get,
stolen, that's
you can't get bit and become a ghoul, is my understanding. But they might try to kill you.
Well, I'll watch it and maybe I'll have thoughts next time. But anyway, I was just curious if you had delved in, and you have. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a video game that I've enjoyed quite a lot. So. Of course.
All
Of
right.
course.
So next up, we're talking about Abigail, which was released in the theaters.
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And this is a vampire film loosely based on Dracula's Daughter. So it's got some of those elements, but it's definitely not following the sort of the formula of that, but I think definitely has some homages, I guess, to it, or some ideas sort of surrounding that.
What is Dracula's Daughter?
So Dracula's Daughter, have you ever seen it?
Of course not.
Well,
I was too busy reading Mountain Man.
Okay. So Dracula's Daughter is like a culty film that happened in 1936. So basically it's like you know, she's got like the same thirst of blood, but it's a little bit more of a like like there's like a psychologist involved and all this other stuff. So it's not it's not like this at all. Like, this is basically just being like Dracula had a daughter, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So this isn't like quite the same, because essentially the character in that film is trying to sort of fight against her thirst for blood, and that is definitely not the case in this particular film. So that's what I mean when it doesn't really have, and it's like an adult woman, so it's not definitely not in the same vein. But you know, there's some daddy issues and things like that. And that has sort of like a weird kind of tension between her and the like psychiatrist that's trying to help her, or psychotherapist that's trying to help her. This is not that. So, this is a film directed by, Matt Bettinelli Oypen? Is that how you say it? Sorry. How do you say this?
Bettinelli Oypen?
And then
Rafe Fiennes.
Shut
Tyler Gillette.
Shut it. Shut it. Anyway.
Written by Stephen Shields and Guy Busick. Busick? Yep. And then a whole bunch of producers. And it seems like a lot of these people in the producer, director, writer list have all worked together before. If you look at some of their previous projects, there a lot of them are linked by Scream and Scream 6
Yes, which we'll
and Ready or Not.
talk about just because of some, we'll get to that because of some of the cast or
Oh
one.
yeah, the our lead lady is also a Scream, one of the Scream's alumnus, alumna.
This was also the writer, Stephen Shields, a guy Busick. This is like, it seems like there's like a lot of overlap just generally in terms of like the kinds of things that they like to work on. That's kind of like the deal here. And you can also see a lot of different references and casting, which we will again get to in a moment. Pretty good cast overall, I would say.
Stellar. Yeah. Like okay, yeah, let's talk about this cast. So Melissa Barrera, I think, is the one you wanted to bring up. She is a Mexican actress who also was in Scream.
She was in Scream and Scream 6, I think.
Now, how can you be in two Scream movies? My
Well,
God, she was in two Scream movies.
yes, she was. And
I
then
thought
she.
they just always killed everybody off, but she plays the same character, Sam Carpenter, in both of those. I haven't seen either of those. Are they any good?
I saw the first one,
And
I
she
think.
was in The Heights playing Vanessa, who I don't remember who that is, but I think she's on the poster art.
But there was controversy because she got released from another of the Scream franchises due to comments she made about the conflict, the Israel-Palestinian conflict. So that's a thing that had been happening.
Huh? Ooh, weird.
Or I'm pretty sure it was her. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, let's not
Sure, it was her.
cast aspersions.
Yep. So, in any case. The fact that she was cast in this, I think, also is a kind of a statement. And there was a lot of controversy over that particular decision. So we have her as the lead, I would say, or one of the leads. We have Dan Stevens as Frank, which I will admit, I did not recognize Dan Stevens. Maybe it was the facial hair or
Oh,
whatever.
he has reinvented his face several
He.
times, but
He has, and
I
you know what?
mostly remember him as Matthew Crawley from Downton Abbey. That's a long time ago now, and he was a little rounder. And then he went and did Legion, and he like lost a bunch of weight. And then I think this is like him kind of in between those two roles. But generally, I feel like I can recognize Dan Stevens, and this is going to sound a little unkind because he has the slightest weak chin, slight, very slight.
So
But
I.
so usually it's like a profile thing where I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that guy.
So I just didn't it didn't register that it was him, even though I guess I saw his name on in the credits or whatever, but he was in Eurovision, the song contest thing as the Russian like guy, whatever his name was. And
That's the Russian guy.
but I just kind of like that he's going all out for all these roles, so I totally support that. And he played this character kind of to the hilt in a tropey way. So I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah, I like that he was where were they suggesting he was from when they were like he's from Queens, he's only been up here like a year or two. Where were they suggesting that he'd moved to?
I think this is supposed to be in upstate New York, which is kind of funny. So I don't know exactly, or maybe it's like the Hamptons or something, but
Yeah.
it's kind of weird.
Yeah, the write-up of the film says that it's upstate New York, but I'm like, is the accent significantly different between upstate New York and Queens? Is there a Queens accent?
There is a Queens accent,
Okay.
so but there's that. We also have Catherine Newton as Sammy, and
Can you quickly just do a Queens accent for me, though?
I don't know how to do a Queens accent.
But you know that it exists.
I can mainly do like a Bronx accent or a part of it, only because I have family members that have the Bronx accent, which you just kind of like say bottle, drawer, you add in certain weird things, and weirdly they all just have a lot of overlap with certain like regional northeast accents. So,
Okay. Well, either way, he's
scissors.
doing it. I almost thought he was doing a Boston accent
Well,
for
that's what I
parts of
mean.
this.
Like those regions, I think for the outsider and maybe for somebody from the UK, it may be really hard to distinguish. He
Yeah.
sounded much more Boston to me as well.
None of these people sounded like they were from New York to me.
No, they did not.
Not a single one of them. Certainly not Kevin Durant, who was going for
I
like
don't know where
very,
he was
very
going.
French Canadian, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, but you were saying Catherine Newton, who we just watched in Lisa Frankenstein, now
No,
is coming.
it's been her year for horror, I suppose,
And
but
certainly her year for Reanimated Podcast, as we watch her do a turn as a kind of a bubbly blonde hacker here. Again, no accent. Accentless American English. She's in this too. We'll get into the performances. And then Kevin Durand, the giant. Oh,
yeah.
sorry, I guess I skipped Will Catlett, who was unknown to me before this. No accent either. He's the Marine. What's his Rat Pack name?
His
Rickles.
pickles,
Rickles. Yes,
like,
and Kevin Durant has a lot of fun with that during the film.
right. I mean, he apparently, and I feel like I have seen him, and so when I kind of looked up his bio, he definitely had a part in Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, but I don't remember that role, and maybe we didn't ever finish watching that whole show, so I don't know if it was one that we
Really
missed.
disturbing, so maybe that's why. But he was also in like The Mentalist and some other stuff. So he's one of those actors that is present in a ton of stuff and is prolific, but I hadn't really seen him in a ton of stuff. But he's really great. So this was like kind of fun to watch him in this. And then Kevin Durand, I guess,
Well,
like,
he's another reanimated favorite as he played
yes.
Fett, and we talked about him for 3 years or 3 seasons of The Strain. We liked him a lot in
And I
that.
do love that they have some of this casting and these little Easter eggs and things like that. Like he's and there's another person in this that they've cast as this was like the big cameo at the end. But
Wait, what's the Easter egg about Kevin Durand?
not an Easter egg, but just sort of like you have a lot of people that have been in kind of vampire-y. I mean, he was like the main role in The Strain. And so having him in this is kind of fun to see him, and he's very distinctive looking, like you can't really mistake him for anybody else,
Yeah.
so it's nice to see him in this.
Yeah.
So
We had Angus Cloud, one of his last films before he died last year in July. And he was from that show about high school and drugs. What's it with
Euphoria.
Zendaya? What's it called?
Euphoria.
Euphoria. I hadn't seen him before in anything else. He just seems like a California kid to me. He's from Oakland.
You also have Giancarlo Esposito.
Yep, and he's also in everything now,
Everything.
which I don't hate because I kind of like him when in everything. So that was fun. And then finally, you said you knew who this guy was, Matthew Good or whatever his name is.
Oh yeah, because he's in like a ton of stuff, but most notably, he plays like the main vampire in the Discovery of Witches series.
Oh.
So he's not just in, I think that there's another, but also you might remember him as Ozymandias from the Watchmen movie.
He was?
Yeah.
Huh. I've completely overwritten him in my brain with Jeremy Irons from the TV show.
Ah, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
So, and he doesn't. I was kind of like, why did it even show up in this film? But we can get to that later.
oh, and
Okay.
I also say he was in this he's been in like he definitely it's not all the things that he does, but he definitely has a bent for sort of like sci-fi supernatural stuff too. So there's that.
Indeed, there is that. So this film, you saw it in the theater, I saw it in the theater. Tell me about your theater going experience. You did your usual Nighthawk.
So I did, and I went solo because nobody wanted to go see a child vampire movie with me. So
bizarre.
But it is kind of fun because Nighthawk does, like, it does things up, and so there's really fun trailers leading into it. And so I sent you a screenshot of one of them, the cat vampire movie, whatever that was that they were previewing. But no, it was really great. And I will say the audience had a lot of fun. So there was a lot of like laughter and at different points in the film. And, you know, so that's always kind of a fun theater going experience where people are really into it and having fun with it. And definitely they were. And, you know, I would imagine at the evening viewing on a Wednesday night, it's going to be people that are into it, not just people that are like, hey, I'm going to just casually go and watch Abigail. So that was kind of fun. How about you?
So I feel like this happens a lot when I try to compare and contrast movie going experiences with you. You go to this like very vivacious, rich tableau experience, and I go to a theater and there's six people in the whole theater.
Oh my God.
I'm not even aware of any of them because nobody's making noise, which I kind of prefer, honestly. It was totally dead quiet, but that's fine.
I don't know. Well, so again, maybe it's like New York versus other places too. This was completely sold out for the most part. There was maybe a couple of seats free. So that was one thing too, but it was definitely people were having a good time. It was fun. So I don't
Wild.
know.
I hope that theater doesn't close down because I'm already having to drive 10 miles to go to the movies when I used to have a theater right in my town. Okay. But so decent. I have no complaints from my movie going experience. It was good. I don't remember what the trailers were. There was no vampire cats though.
No, the vampire cats were really funny, and it was just like they're taking over the world and all this other stuff. It was pretty awesome. So
delightful. So our film opens with a little dance number. Does this girl? Oh, we didn't talk about who's playing Abigail.
Oh yeah. Well, I think we were leaving the best for last, so we should probably talk about that.
Yeah, her name's Alicia Weir, from Ireland.
Yep.
She does not have an accent either, which is surprising because she's like probably a 13-year-old girl when she was making this movie. But she does a decent, is it American? Is it just like flat neutral American?
I think it's a flat neutral American. She has a couple moments where it slips, but nothing, she pulls it off. And apparently she's been Matilda in the Matilda the Musical film, which I have not seen. And that's pretty much it. Other than, like, I think there's a couple of smaller films, but nothing that I have seen. She was in something called Darklands, which I feel like I have heard of, but I have not seen.
No, I don't think I've seen her in anything of this list either. But she's pretty phenomenal in this, especially given her age. Yep. And I guess they also must have had a contortionist on set because the character of Abigail does some contortion-y type stuff at times. That I don't see in her can-dos, her
no,
bona fides.
I mean, she's been on stage, so she's also done like musicals like Oliver and other things on stage and once. And then she is a dancer, so that is definitely something she actually does.
Yeah, and so the ballet was probably.
And you can tell, absolutely.
Yeah. She is fantastic in this, and it starts with a pretty good. There's a lot of Swan Lake going on in this film. In fact, I came home humming Swan Lake because I was just like, that's pretty much the Swan Lake is now a horror song in my head when I hear it. So if you're thinking that Swan Lake sounds too upbeat and happy for you, go ahead and watch Abigail and you'll come home thinking, well, now it's creepy.
Yeah.
So she does. She starts off doing a lot of ballet to an empty theater. And while we see the other members of the cast sort of come together in the background in these other edits and cuts around her dance performance.
And I mean, we should point out that she is dancing alone in an incredibly luxurious theater. She has the means to do this. And probably this group of kidnappers maybe should have registered that, unless they didn't know that that's what was going on. But she has this whole theater to herself.
I think they must have known what they were up against when the payday that they're all up to get was $7 million each.
Right. Like, so we could talk about some plot holes in this, because there is some, you know, everything that we see from the beginning with this character exudes absolute wealth, absolute, honestly, isolation. She is alone, except for the people that serve her. And there is, you know, you as an audience are definitely made to, you're filling in a certain narrative. I think, honestly, I don't know what you think about this, but I think they gave away too much in the trailer, a little bit, because that just basically gave away the whole plot of the film.
You know, I never watched the trailer.
It's been playing, not only has it been playing sort of like everywhere, like that, you know, online or whatever, there's also like ads in the subway and things like that. So you can't, honestly, I don't think I could have avoided it if I wanted to, but, and it's been kind of ubiquitous, and leading up to the release of this, it's been everywhere. So, and I kind of wish I didn't see the trailer, but I don't think it gave, I mean, I don't think it takes away too much, because it's fine knowing what's going to happen. But it would have been more fun had I not known, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But basically everything that they have with this character, there's a lot of control. There is a lot of, like, it, just in terms of her dance, the level of control of the dance and the role she is playing. She's supposed to be like, I think, 10-ish, 11-ish. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe, no, sorry, 12. I think they say she's 12 or something.
Okay.
But she's playing things well above the level, and has a level of control that no kid at that age would have. And so this privilege that she is living in, probably should have tipped them off a little bit, just everything that they sort of see surrounding this. She's got a driver and like a assistant and all this stuff going on. She has her own cell phone, and she's just conducts herself in an incredibly adult way. So you're not, I don't know, even from the get-go, that you're getting the idea that this is like a vulnerable child, although some of these kidnappers read it that way, especially our main character, Joey. So, you know, I did like how they set it up. I liked how they were just, I don't think they were at all trying to be sneaky about it. They were kind of putting things in the forefront, at least for the audience to pick up, even if our little band of kidnappers didn't pick this up.
I mean, the movie, even title, and if you're even like, if you've seen one poster, you know that she's the villain.
Right.
So what is there to even hide? Yeah. What's the point of being coy about it? Yeah. So, yeah, I think the thing that we have to try to understand is why the kidnappers think that this is a good idea on any level. And that it's not really that clear, except for the $7 million, which we find out about pretty
right.
soon. And between these few different scenes, we've got the woman whose name we find out later, where her pseudonym is Joey. She's like got some sort of thing with lollipops. And she's got a gun, and she gets into a van with two other people, including Dan Stevens, who is his glasses, I think, are what throw you off the most for his
maybe
costuming.
The facial hair. I don't
he's
know.
Got these big round glasses that like take up most of his face, and he's
very,
very gruff.
70s glasses too. They're kind of, they look like they could have come out of Jaws, like the, you know, how they have the eyewear of all the people in Jaws. That's what they kind of look like to me.
Yeah. And the van is being driven by, oh, who's driving them? Is it Frank?
No. The van is by Dean, by Cloud, right? Angus Cloud.
He's driving the hacker. Angus Cloud's character is a Dean, and he's driving Sammy, which is Catherine Newton.
Okay.
And so I think it's Peter. It's Kevin Durand who is driving.
Right. Okay.
Who is driving the van that's carrying Joey and Dan Stevens. Is Dan Stevens Frank?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah, I never even got all the names down. And then when they actually said what everybody's real names were, I was like, oh my God. But then they kept calling them by their fake names, which I was kind of grateful for.
Agree.
But Joey's in the car. They're not like on good terms. The guy, Dan Stevens, is speaking down to her. She's looking through like the syringes that are back there, part of her kit. I want to say that Kevin Durand, Frank, Peter was like trying to make small talk or something.
None of them have worked together, so it's also that part of like this group of thieves and whether there's honor or dishonor amongst them.
Right.
And they, and there's always that sort of like trope, like don't give away too much. So you have got like Peter basically asking questions or asking names, and everybody's like, stop that, don't do that. We don't want to like know it. Like this sort of like unforced errors that would make it like make this whole thing go buzz, because you really don't want anybody to know each other, and that's a
Yeah.
way of kind of keeping things anonymous.
So they're one of these groups who don't know who each other are, but they all have jobs to do. And it seems like Frank is the leader, even though they're all split up into different groups from the beginning. Because the other three of them are Sammy, Dean, who are in a car, and Rickles, who is up on the roof of, I don't know, like a garage or something with a rifle, doing Overwatch. And so when the other car arrives, he's like watching them go into the house as they prepare to greet the limo, or the Abigail, which they're calling Tiny Dancer on their phone, on their group text or whatever.
Which is kind of funny. And they also there's that tension between the kidnappers, who's revealing what, and also just sort of some, it's interesting because they show very professional and sort of like behavior that means that they've done this before, they've done some nefarious things before. But even in the dynamic between like Sammy and Dean, he's basically hitting on her. And she's trying to do her job, and he like turns up the music and she just turns it down. And so there's already tension between the kidnappers, even as they lead into this particular piece of their plan. Their plan is pretty like they have to be coordinated, they have to be in sync, they have to be fast. And also you learn the pieces of this that they don't know about. So they may know about the ransom. They may know about other stuff, but somehow they all didn't know that they were kidnapping a little girl. However, Frank did, So,
Yeah, true.
and it's interesting to me because it's also you've set Joey up, and she's clearly got a kid, because of her reaction to this, and sort of we find out more about that later, obviously. And she has some medical training because her job in this particular like instance is to drug Abigail. And the thing about that is that that's a very different scenario than drugging an adult. So
Yeah,
that.
but you remember she was given those syringes pre-dosed.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. So it's like there's things in this that it's revealed to her in the moment, and how is she going to react in the moment? And so there's a lot of like slight drama that just kind of appears.
Yeah, she's like, I didn't know it was going to be a kid. And Frank's like, yeah, it is a kid. So what? Let's do it. Or whatever. I forget how he was talking, but. For a minute there too, I was like, wait, if she didn't know that she was supposed to be anesthetizing a child, how could she have, prepared these syringes? But I also was like, oh, but Lambert must have been the one who prepared the syringes. The question here, and this, I feel like the whole film lynches on this pin. Why did Abigail agree if she did, and why did Lambert give them a vampire sedating medicine in these syringes?
Right. And the other part is, it's like, I thought she was maybe faking it for a while until we get further into the film. But I guess this is one of those plot holes I guess we'll have to just deal with.
Is that a plot hole, or is it just like maybe like it's also just the kind of thing that isn't explained, so maybe it's not a plot hole. Maybe the writers are like, yeah, you know, Lambert was already trying to undermine her. So he would have, instead of the saline solution that she had agreed to, he put in an actual drug. And then she's already committed to the scheme, and she's very confident that she can still take care of business, even though now there is a wrinkle in the plan, which is that she's actually been sedated.
The other thing about it, and I mean, I think that this is the whole thing, and they do a very funny thing in the film. Once, you know, the reality of what she is discovered, but, you know, she's also pretty much invulnerable unless somebody does something to her. So I guess if they knocked her out and put her into sunshine, that would take care of her. But they don't know enough about that yet. And then, you know, but for the most part, even if they knock her out, she's going to come back and be fine. So that could be it too. But I would bet that Lambert put something in there that Abigail maybe didn't know about. But yeah, you would, that she would have, like, if that had actually happened, it's, as we see, she has full freedom to go about that house. She would have taken him out.
You think she would have killed him earlier? And maybe she would have, but maybe she had her hands full, and maybe she wasn't really worried about Lambert.
Yeah.
Because she is the most powerful person in that house until the very end. Like, maybe her dad is more powerful than her.
Yeah. But in any case, you know, they basically get her. There's a little bit of intrigue because they got the guy that, you know, they have somebody coming home and they have to get out, and there's a whole alarm going off, and it feels like, aha, they've gotten away with it. And they drive to an undisclosed location to hold her for ransom.
Yeah. Frank does that dumb thing where they're walking toward the back gate and he's like, I think we got this in the bag or something stupid. And then the alarm goes off. I'm just like, why would you ever? Nobody even like semi-professional would even say something like that when you're not even into your getaway car yet. That was frustrating. That was a little bit of a frustrating moment. And then also frustrating is Angus Cloud, the character Dean, played by Angus Cloud, driving like a maniac through the city of New York.
Right. Yeah. Because
and they're like, hey, good driving. I'm just like, you're just drawing attention to yourself. You've got a drug child in the back of your van.
Right. And I will say it was pretty disturbing. They put her in the bag. And it just looks like it's pretty upsetting. I don't know. I just didn't love that. And again, I think they have to make her so indestructible in this film. And when her real personality comes out, there's, I think, a deliberateness to that, because no matter what, it's still hard to see a child being treated like that. Your perception of her as a child is pretty, for me, ingrained in that it's hard to watch anything happen to that kid, no matter whether she is an old soul or not. But even, you know, the fact that they were like, they put her in the bag. I mean, they do at least unzip it when she gets in the car so that she can breathe and stuff. But or so they think.
And that's when Joey puts her fingers on her neck to measure her pulse.
Yep.
What I don't understand about this is that she asserts that that's how she knows she's unconscious.
Because you don't
have a control. Like, you didn't test it. You didn't check her pulse before you sedated her. So maybe her heart rate always sounds slow and steady.
Also, I got to say, the fact that there is a pulse is also something to discuss.
That's kind of concerning in a vampire. Yeah, maybe that's the plot hole. It's like, yeah, trying to take somebody's blood pressure is not how that's going to work. Yeah. Okay, but yeah, so they drive to quote-unquote upstate New York to another, from one creepy large, well, it's not even creepy, from one large mansion to another. This one has a lot of emblems and Giancarlo Esposito standing in front of it. But even just like through the gates, there's rats on the symbology. Was it rats? Yeah,
there's also like that big, the big game in the beginning. There's like different like family crests. Like, this is very old money that they're looking at and very creepy. And you couldn't look more like sort of like the quintessential haunted house or haunted hunting lodge or whatever you want to call it. You know, the fact that they're driving in here and nobody's sort of saying, hey, what is this place? Is kind of like, you know, that should have been setting off some alarm bells maybe.
Yeah.
But they get there, and also, you know, in terms of just filming and sort of a filming a horror film, the color as they like drive up is so desaturated. It definitely a callback to like old horror flicks and things like that. It feels that way, or at least it did to me, where everything is like a little worn down, but definitely like a luxurious setting and also an incredibly secure setting. Everything about this house tells you that there is some kind of like level of security, like the gates, and it looks foreboding, even if it is a little rundown.
Yeah, I mostly got run down out of it. But then obviously the security thing comes in more as the film
Well, you
goes
find out more
on.
about that later, but even when you look outside the house, it does not look like some welcoming place. It is definitely old school, and you know, it is it is, and the house is like kind of like massive.
We find out more about the job here with this brief interaction with Lambert, Giancarlo Esposito, who is their only contact. And then he kind of just runs it down for them. It's a 24-hour job. He's going to go and negotiate for $50 million from the dad, but he needs all their cell phones, which they hand over and he takes with him. And then that's kind of it. He's done. He's gone. And he's just like, all right, keep her alive. Keep her safe for 24 hours. What a weird job. I feel like if I was one of these people, I would think this surely is a different crew's job to like watch her.
Well, right. And also, why wouldn't you just scatter and leave one person to watch? Or why do you need everybody? You don't. Maybe it's
Yeah.
ostensibly to get the money so nobody rats out the group or double crosses. Maybe that's part of it. But essentially, they're kind of like the Breakfast Club waiting until dawn in their detention until like
Yeah, very much.
they
Yeah.
can basically be released and get their money.
And they all make, the typical sort of errors here, where because unfortunately this place has a full stock bar. They're all a lot of them are getting drunk or drinking anyway. Some of them are definitely getting drunk, except for Joey, who is abstaining, and that's weird. She instead decides to go and check on Abigail, who has been handcuffed to a bed. Bed upstairs.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not weird because she's in charge of Abigail the entire time, so that makes
No, I know,
total.
but I mean, it's weird to her castmates, to the other criminals who are like, "No, we're all here to drink." I'm like, actually, again, with the overconfidence, let's saying that we got this handled when you're still on the property of the kidnap house.
Right.
She goes upstairs, checks on Abigail, takes off the blindfold, is very reassuring and kind, reveals that she has a son. And Abigail moves the handcuffs to the front, and then Abigail, as Joey is about to leave. Oh, and they've also been given all the kidnappers have been given different Rat Pack names by Lambert, so that they had something to call each other because Peter wouldn't let it go.
Yeah.
Kevin Durand is basically the humor. Him and Sammy, I think, kind of trade off on being the funny people on this cast. So they're all given these Rat Pack names. Melissa Barrera's character is going now by Joey. And she reveals that she has a son. Abigail says, "I'm going to call your son Justin for some reason." And then she's like, "I'm sorry for what's going to happen to you here."
Yeah, and she says that in that really creepy way. I will say Joey in this whole scenario has basically made every single mistake in the book. She didn't blindfold her, which, you know, that
If she was originally blindfolded, I think she was probably blindfolded for 20 minutes. It doesn't seem like it.
was. And then like the fact that Joey is just like, "Oh no, I'll take this off." That is absolutely a big no-no, even if she is covering up her face. You know, fine with the handcuffs, but then she's also revealing personal information. All sorts of things which you would never do with a kidnap victim because you don't want them to remember any details about you. So you need to be a blank slate. But this also, you know, especially the things that Joey reveals, the soft spot that she has for children, that she's got a son, and we learn more about that later. But you know, she is treating Abigail with kindness and basically says she'll protect her and all sorts of things. And look, the way that the group is acting downstairs, while they are not necessarily unduly menacing, we have seen with Frank, especially in the beginning when they were kidnapping Abigail, because Abigail was reacting. She, you know, fights off the kidnapping attempt, and Frank is about to like knock her out, like punch a kid, and Joey stops him, and he like later says, "You ever do that again, and I'll like have to take action," or something like that. So Joey, I think there is a reason, like Joey is like, "Oh yes, I will protect you," and already has. But you know, Abigail doesn't know all of this necessarily, but she is absolutely like gathering information, and we learn more later. Like Abigail is playing, which is kind of fun as this movie unfolds. But Joey really doesn't know that she's being played yet. So
Well,
it's
it's fairly subtle. Even all the manipulation that Abigail does, it's never too crazy. It's in this case, it I wonder if it is playing a long con. She keeps Abigail alive till the very last. She keeps Joey alive until the very last. She knows that she's kind of created a certain bond here. So she might be playing a long con throughout the whole film, just in case she needs Joey's help, which,
Well,
she
true, but
eventually
then
does.
also, I mean, the other things that probably should have been tipping Joey off is how incredibly calm Abigail is. Like, even Abigail saying scared
I
and
mean,
things like that.
she's like, oh, my mask is too tight.
No,
Oh,
yeah,
where
but
am I? What are you doing? But she's not losing her mind for sure.
no. And so this is, you know, and it's kind of fun to watch it play out. And I have to say, this, like, you know, sometimes kid actors aren't so like as successful as this is, but she's really pretty successful. Alicia Weir is like very, very much playing this like a pro. So I kind of thought that that was fun. And
I don't remember when Joey had also done her magic trick by guessing details about everybody else on the crew, if it was
and
before or
revealing
after.
better reveals that you probably shouldn't know, but you know, she gets like her whole, you know, oh, Frank's a former police detective, and Sammy is a little rich girl who hacks, and Dean is not a professional, and you know, definitely this
Of
one
all
is.
the revelations, Dean is not a professional and maybe a sociopath. I felt like that was kind of the weakest.
Yeah, it was.
His
And you know,
character was the least defined.
And I wondered if there was supposed to be a little bit more with him, and maybe they couldn't because they didn't have enough scenes. But I thought he had finished filming
In
this.
theory, he had finished all of his shooting before he died, the actor.
Which is, you know, like it's very sad because I think he died of unintentional like drug overdose, and he does read to me, and I don't think it didn't feel like it was acting. Like he did read to me as somebody that's like kind of struggling and out there and altered. So whether that was acting or
But that
no,
was definitely the role he was playing too, though. Like, he was
playing.
just wasted.
Yeah. But anyway, so they all reveal all this stuff about each other, that or she reveals all the stuff about them, and then they, you know, Frank does the big reveal about her, is that she's a former junkie. And
I think
then
it must have been before she went upstairs to talk to
was.
Abigail, because the first thing she does when she comes downstairs is she's like, that girl just freaked me out. I don't scare easy, but when I do, I pay attention. And she's like, Frank, who is her dad? And so then Frank runs upstairs, basically doesn't tell anybody he's doing this, runs upstairs, opens the door, she sees his face, he freaks out because now she's knows what he looks like, and like puts a gun to her head, and he's like, who's your dad, who's your dad? And she tells him her dad is Christoph Lazar. Is that an anagram or anything?
Well, I mean, if it's Lazarus come back from the dead,
I
then,
guess.
you know, that's probably part of that. But you know, there's, and then they all have the ghost stories about, and then suddenly it's like a big crisis because Christoph Lazar is like really a big bad, and everybody knows him, and so he actually is like, I'm gonna walk out of here, and then the whole big game is afoot at this point where it's like, you know, what are we gonna do? Because her dad is not gonna forgive, and there's all this sort of debate. Do we leave her here and make a call in? Is he still gonna chase, chase us down, and all this other kind of stuff, and then you hear about how much the money actually is, and you know, they basically decide, well, we'll just sit here until the morning and play it out and run away, which doesn't exactly seem like the best solution given what they've just been talking about Lazar. So anyway,
Yeah, but in a vampire-free scenario, the Lazar should not be able to find them or know who any of them are, except for now Abigail has seen Frank's face. And then so I think there's a few of these sorts of like, oh, we gotta get out of here. Okay, we're gonna talk it down and we're gonna settle down and figure it out, because Frank does not try to leave. And they all kind of split off and go to their different areas, right? And including Sammy goes to watch like cartoons, really creepy cartoons, on a creepy little old TV. And Dean scares her and tries to like, just spend time with her, but has started off by scaring the crap out of her. And so he wanders down to the kitchen, and then into another weird little root cellar, maybe, that's off the kitchen, where he is dragged to his death. His death screams are overheard by Sammy, who goes downstairs and finds his decapitated head and body like posed in the kitchen.
Right. And there's definitely a piece here where we don't see the monster for a really
No.
long time.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of fun that when it's revealed to be Abigail, like she's very nonchalant about it and matter of fact.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the ruse is over and the fear and the paranoia that it recreates between these people is pretty great because she basically Dean just kind of like we hear like a rat get killed, which is pretty kind of fun. And then when he's discovered by Sammy, he'd already scared Sammy before, so she thinks he's messing around. And so there's another jump scare when it's like his body is there with his head falling off. And then because nobody has seen anything, they're all kind of accusing each other or thinking about what it might be. They talk about this like
That
super
hitman.
crazy hitman, Valdez, and but there's a lot of like distrust of each other. And the one thing I will say, just in terms of like their way of going about this house, okay, so they know that one of their people have been killed. Why would you ever separate at that point? Going forward, you should all be staying in the same room together, but they
Yeah.
don't do that. They all split up. You never split up. This is like a horror trope, which, you know, a little bit maybe of a tip of the hat to Scream in other films that make fun of those tropes, but they really just are a mess in sort of figuring out what's going on. And you know, I think it is kind of interesting. They have these moments between characters, like between Joey and Rickles, where they're like, okay, we'll watch each other's backs. And like, and then Rickles gets taken out almost immediately following that. Again, not revealing the villain, the true villain, the monster. So there was a
It
lot of.
happens. I like that one a lot. That was maybe one of my favorite deaths,
Yeah, that was great.
because Joey just they basically just had a conversation. He just left Abigail's room too. He's going to the right, she's going to the left. You like the camera's on her for a second, but then you hear a noise. She turns around. He's still standing 5, 10 feet behind her, but now he's doing some sort of weird thing and his back's the camera. You're like, oh, he's done. But it was a cool reveal. And also the best thing about Rickles is actually Peter, Kevin Durand, who insists on calling him Mr. Wrinkles,
Yeah,
because Peter is lovably idiotic and he didn't know who Don Rickles was, so he just keeps calling him Mr. Wrinkles, which I thought was very funny. Kevin Durand is great in this. But that's it. That's it for Rickles, who was the fighter. Like he was the guy with like, although all of his rifle and stuff got stolen after Dean died, and they tried to leave the house for sure. Because then they were like, oh shoot, Valdez is here. We gotta get out. And then they realized that there's like metal shutters across everything and the front door. They can't get out. They're stuck in there, which is why they start to split up and look around to try and find the killer.
And then,
It's
yeah, and then they go into Abigail's room, and like there's a lot like here and a lot of tension. And you know, and this is like the whole thing is that they're gonna, you know, basically hurt Abigail to get information out of her about Valdez, about her dad. and Joey intervenes. But it gets to the point where it's just there's guns and it's definitely getting out of control. And when we see Abigail just sort of matter-of-factly take her hands out of the handcuffs, and there's very much a sigh like, oh, I guess I just have to take care of business.
Yeah.
She does. And it's really kind of amazing, the reveal, and it's fun and ridiculous. And their reactions are really great. Keeping this level of tension with the actors is fun.
Yeah.
They,
and I like that Joey goes from trying to protect Abigail in this scene from Frank to actually shooting Abigail
like multiple times in her chest, and like, you know, and it's just like, oh my gosh, all bets are off, the kid's a vampire, and they all like go downstairs, and this is the great thing because it's like they have no idea how to deal with it, and then they all start throwing out like, what are the things that vampires like react to, and they, you know, this is really like the comedy in this is pretty great because like, you know, Frank sends Sammy to get garlic and the onions thing. She comes with onions, and like they all, he's like, oh, go sharpen some steaks. And they're all like very much like frenetically reacting to this. And then it's a little Ghostbusters like in like how they go and seek her out. And Joey, having seen this and also having interacted with Abigail earlier, is like, I am having no part of this. And I'm going to just sit down here. And so I thought that that was kind of a fun contrast in how the different people are reacting.
Yeah.
I think also because she shot her three times full on in the chest and didn't do anything, she's just like, I'm not going to go and like confront that, whatever this is. And their whole confrontation with Abigail, who's in her own little dance studio, she's got music going, she is absolutely unfazed, and she's dancing with the corpse of Dean, who she's managed to drag up all these stairs somehow.
That's a good point.
It's like, really, you know, they that should have given them pause probably, but she's just playing with them. And even this whole,
she's just like licking the garlic, beating up Sammy, she stabs Frank through the leg with the pool cue that he was the snap, like the improvised stake, stabs it right through his leg, and also punctures Peter's chest like 30 times with the crucifix, and there's blood spattering everywhere. I was almost like, is this, are they gonna kill his character this way? But no, he actually holds on for a while longer,
right? And then they, you know, and then this keep, and then they come back, and you know, Joey's kind of like, oh, how'd that go for you? And she, you know, she's just kind of sitting there like, kind of told you so. And Frank's even like, don't say I told you so. And then this just continues where it's like she's basically playing with them, and this culminates into the whole scene where she's like actually flies, and there's like moments where they're like, oh my gosh, she's like a flying ballerina vampire or something like that. So they really play upon the ridiculousness of this. And Alicia Ware really does a great job at being, at commanding the power in this. She's really just biding her time, stalking each of them.
Yeah, when she sneaks up on Peter during that, right before the sedation scene, she just kind of walks up to him and clears her throat from a hallway, right? Like, she has said that she likes to play with her food. She has also, well, I guess she says that after she's caught after this scene. But when she starts to reveal more about why she's doing what she's doing, it's actually more interesting, which is not necessarily how you think that would go.
Right.
But they do manage to sedate her again, but that's their last syringe. So I kind of wish they'd come up with a better end game than lock her in an elevator, which she is clearly able to get out of. She's broken her hands to get out of handcuffs. I feel like they could have had a better idea for how to do this. But it's still nighttime, I think, when she wakes up from the sedative.
And, you know, we also had Sammy, who like goes through the little pool of corpses, which is pretty gross.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was gross.
And then, but even when she shows up, like her comedic timing is pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, this is very campy and gory and disgusting. But you also got the sense that the cast was having so much fun doing this. And just how they were playing off each other in all of these scenes. And I do love how Alicia Ware is, like, her interactions with each, like, member of this little crew. She's manipulative And she does this whole thing where she's like, okay, let me out and only two of you die, or let me out and only one of you dies. And it's like, well, and Joey's right. She's like, well, she's just gonna kill all of us, y'all. But yet Frank still plays into this thing, sort of. And he's such a dick and just tries to manipulate her back, and he is not playing in the same game as she is, as it is shown.
Yeah,
And
he's trying to manipulate her back, and it clearly backfires.
right. And the only thing I will say about the vampire lore, like, none of the things that they think will work except sunshine.
Well,
So,
and stakes.
sorry, go ahead.
And stakes.
And stakes, but not, none of the things
The
that.
problem is you're trying to overpower a hugely strong creature with a piece of wood, like which is evidenced when she stabs him through his leg with his stake at first. But when he later stabs Lambert in the back with the stake, he explodes right away. So it's just a matter of being able to be fast enough to
And them being vulnerable enough in that moment, I suppose. But the reveal with the sunshine was pretty good. But they're also playing upon different things, like, Sammy's been bitten by Abigail while they were trying to sedate her, and she's terrified she's going to turn to a vampire. And Abigail, when they ask her if Sammy's going to turn, she's like, I don't know, or maybe, or something. Like, she's very, like, cryptic. And so there's these moments where Sammy's like putting herself in the sunshine and is relieved that it actually works. And they do a slow burn on that particular story. But there really is like a cat and mouse game going on throughout this. Abigail is always in control, no matter whether she seems like she's not. The only time that they had any kind of control over her was when they sedated her, and then they did not try to kill her. So that was their mistake. But
Because that was the only time they actually had the upper hand. But the sun was not quite up yet. So then they split up once again. I don't remember why at this point in the film they'd split up, but it was Sammy and Peter with Frank and Joey going off to a different area.
they were basically looking for like the power box of the security
They were
system.
trying to hack the house. Yeah, they were trying to look for the control room, which eventually Lambert just opens a door and lets them in. Why he's decided to do this now instead of earlier, I don't know. But Sammy, though, finally does succumb to the power of the bite. And it's kind of a cool way of doing this where Abigail's all the way up in her dance studio, puts on a record, and then like dance puppeteers Sammy. I thought that was pretty cool. What did you think of that scene?
I liked it, and I thought that her physicality in this was really great for both of them.
Yeah, they were matching each other's movements identically to my eye. I thought that was awesome.
And also the whole like sort of bait and switch where you think Sammy isn't turning, and Peter's like, oh, I can handle her, and then clearly cannot handle her. That's actually kind of great. And just the ending where Abigail is absolutely toying with her, and then basically kills her off and is sort of like, all right, whatever. Now on to the next people, and she's picking them off one by one. And ostensibly, these are all people that have done wrong to her father or her father's empire.
She has explained that now. Yeah. Then she knows all their real names. She knows every detail, but each of them has done something, whether they knew it or not, that betrayed Christoph Lazar's crime empire. So they have all got to go. And they've also been like psychoanalyzing her to be like, you're just trying to, you've said before that your dad doesn't care about you and he's not going to pay the ransom. And I think that was true. And you're just killing all of his enemies to try and make him love you. So they're trying to get this was like the less successful part of the movie for me was this like try to psychoanalyze this multiple 100-year-old vampire creature. I mean, maybe it's good, maybe it makes sense, but for me,
Yeah,
I was
but
like,
ultimately, really, what's motivating Abigail is that, her, and she brings this out. She brings out several themes of this. And because she lies about a lot of stuff, it's hard to know what's true or not. But
that's true.
basically said her father wasn't really prepared to be a father. And a lot of the things that motivates her is trying to get his attention. And so what she's decided to do is just to kind of take out all of his enemies, maybe in a bid to get his attention. And so that's real. I also do like all the things that are sort of in the background of this movie, that if you look closely, like there's that the statue portrait of the two of them.
Yeah.
There you see Dean see like a painting, which is definitely of Abigail and her dad. And so there's a lot that's referencing their relationship, and also the fact that this particular house is sort of like decrepit and falling down, which may be kind of an allegory for their relationship. And she's just kind of acting out all this stuff on her own, but is powerful enough that she orchestrated the whole thing. And so, you know, she controls everything, and there isn't, you know, all of them are going to succumb to it eventually. And even Lambert's sort of paltry attempts at, you know, betraying her is also like thwarted. And I do have the feeling that even if he had succeeded and Frank had actually banded with him, I still think she would have won out. But that's, you know.
He was like, we're gonna also kill Christoph Lazar, which we don't have, we don't really get to see the strength of Pappy Vampire, but I can't imagine that they would have been able to do anything about him.
If this is the daughter, forget it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and so it you know, the story just keeps playing out. And honestly, even up until the end, I would say, like, and I think it's deliberate, there's ambiguity about what Abigail is doing with Joey, because we know she's manipulative and she
Yeah.
is using that relationship. And I was fully ready for her to turn on Joey right at the end. So she basically enlists Joey, even in sort of referencing their pinky swear before, into taking out Frank. And Frank's very powerful, and so you do think that this is a losing battle. And Abigail just keeps coming back. And I would say that just in terms of like gore, this is where it just reaches a peak, like a total like fever pitch peak,
Yeah.
where it's just gross blood upon blood, them taking each other out. This is definitely the place where there was a contortionist involved.
Yeah.
And I don't know that an actual human were to survive the things that Joey was surviving. And I do think that it's ridiculous. And she's, I don't think she's walking out of this without being like severely crippled or something. You know, I don't think she's walking after all this.
Well, she seems fine. I mean, she's the final girl, so she's kind of invincible. But like you said, the plot armor might not have been there. Certainly, Lambert was about to kill her. Then he was like, Frank, no, you kill her. I did think that Frank being turned into a vampire and then suddenly being super duper evil felt like a little bit of a leap because they'd been through a lot together, Frank and Joey. So maybe it's just like, unavoid, like you can't help it. I know he was a jerk, but he'd also softened over the course of the film.
Yeah, but he still is only his own. I don't know. There's just things about him that he's just smarmy, and so it doesn't surprise me. I will say for a moment, I thought when he killed Lazar that he was gonna like tell Joey that they're gonna now band against Abigail. So I thought that that was a possibility, but that's not where they went with it. And I honestly think that that was kind of a fun twist that it ends up being Joey and Abigail that band together, and
Yeah, I
take.
also thought when he killed Lambert that he was going to be like, okay, you and me, let's get Abigail, let's get out of here. But instead, he's like, no, you have to run because I'm going to come and eat you. It's like, wow, that's
Yeah.
messed up.
And I do like how Abigail has been a vampire for so long that she isn't even like, she just keeps coming back. She's just like, all right, well, I'm gonna basically take you out. And with Joey, manages to take Frank out, and by tricking him essentially, because he thinks that Joey's gonna be his puppet. And I do like her sort of parting words to him, which is like, hey, you know, you have to be alive a really, or you have to be a vampire a long time to learn how to do all the cool stuff. And so, you know, he has no idea that Joey's sort of feigning the control that he has over her.
Right.
And so when they are successful in taking Frank out, I did think, again, this is like kind of the fun part of it, is that I did think they were going to have Abigail turn on her again, but they don't. And then they introduce dad. And again, I love Matthew Good, so this was kind of a fun thing. And he's pretty menacing. And if this is the daughter, I think that they are sort of implying like how much worse he is. And there's that whole thing between the father and the daughter, even if it's like a weird monstery thing, that there is definitely there's some issues that they've been having. And he's just kind of like he smells Joey in a really creepy way. And I mean, the makeup's pretty good. I do like the vampire makeup here for both of them. And
It's
there
mostly
is
just teeth. I mean, what other elements are
so
you?
the I feel like the skin and just his movements are very like creepy and exaggerated, and he does not move. He's not moving like in a human way. So he and Abigail definitely have this almost dancer-like grace that is not normal. And I
I found
also
his outfit kind of weird. Like he's wearing like a gray overcoat.
yeah, and it's like very I don't know, like he and there's this whole thing where I do love the reveal where he's home and he just walks in and there's basically the whole area is just destroyed and it's like all covered in blood. They're all covered in blood. And you know, this is normal in his world because he's a monster, and also it's been dealing with Abigail all of her supernatural life. And so their interactions are not human, but they are like human related in the father-daughter sense. And the fact that he eventually lets Joey go because Abigail is like, she saved my life, and it was just kind of funny. And I do love how Joey just like she's basically is just like WTF as she walks out of the house, like what is all of this? I don't even know.
Yeah. And the fact that she walks out, it's nighttime again.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, you're screwed. I mean, you could get to there, but the movie ends on kind of an upbeat feel where she just gets in the van, gets a lollipop, and then drives away, and you don't see the vampires come out to like chase her or anything.
At least, you know, there you don't. But no, you know, I have to say, I would kind of like to see the adventures of Dracula and Abigail. If anything, I wanted mo to see a little bit more of Dracula. I was hoping for more of an intervention before Frank died, but that he would have popped up. But I think part of it is that Abigail had to like do this on her own and or do this with the help of Joey. And this is all a ploy to get his attention. So, but that was kind of interesting. Like, oh, this is what you have to do to get Dracula's attention is like kill all these people. And she's been doing it for years.
Based on the swimming pool, yeah, just a lot of dead bodies. I found the appearance of Christoph Lazar, Dracula, or whatever at the end a little odd. Like he'd been, I think he almost it would have been better not to show him at all, but somehow allude to the fact that he was there or watching over them for whatever reason. To me, it was just kind of like a little bit of a let down that he showed up, but I
I wanted there to be a reveal of him. I just wanted it to be more. So I didn't want him to never be shown. Because I think his absenteeism is part of what drives that character, and so you need to have closure there. But I just wanted more of it, I guess. Or something a little bit deeper. So I don't know. That's kind of That was kind of how I felt. And I really like Matthew Good, so I was psyched to see him in it. And I was just like, oh, that's pretty awesome that they got him to do it. But again, I think I just wanted more of his story as it related to her and maybe more of a resolution between those two. Like, what's their plan now? I wanted more out of it. So I wish it just had been a little deeper in terms of that appearance, but you know, again, it's a silly, campy, ridiculous, gory horror jaunt. So you're gonna, I don't think you can have it all.
It was all those things. This was a lot of fun. It had the right amount of laughs. It had a couple of jump scares. Nothing too crazy. It had some gross, and it had a great child actor. And not that that's something I need in everything, but for whatever reason, I think it was mostly the way that she was messing with people's heads, and you could never really tell where Abigail was coming from. Oh, you always assumed that it was malicious, but then it turns out that it wasn't all the time. I don't know. I really enjoyed that. I think that the cast of Survivor people was really interesting, all very flawed, obviously. And, you know, killing Mr. Wrinkles early on was helpful too. Fantastic. I had a great time watching this.
I did too. And I mean, I did, after I watched it, I read through some of the reviews and, you know, it seems like there was like a lot of criticism. They're like, oh, it doesn't do anything new. And I'm like, I don't know that it needed to do anything new. I think that honestly, this was just a lot of fun to watch. And if you're a horror fan, and you go into this and you're looking to just have like a really fun time, this is it. And I thought the cast was great. I thought that the, especially when the casting of the main role for Abigail is so important. And I thought that Alicia Weir carried this off amazingly well. And I would love to see her in so many things. She did such an incredible job. And, you know, I thought that the fight choreography was fun. I thought that the effects were fun and campy and silly and ridiculous.
When her hand blew up and started to grow back, that was pretty visceral and wild as far as effects go.
And it was such a great, like, okay, this is the thing that is like her big weakness. And they show that enough so that when Sammy blows up, it's like, oh, this is, you know, it's going to be bad because Sammy's like, there's like smoke coming off of her just from little pieces of the sunshine. And so I really loved the execution of this. And I also loved how much fun it seemed that everybody was having, both making it and acting in it. And so I like left this and I was talking to some people and I was like, hey, this is like really fun. I, you know, a friend of mine was like, oh, I think I'd be too scared. And again, maybe I'm in a certain, and you and I watch enough of these things that this is like definitely in our wheelhouse. But I kind of feel like people who aren't horror films could still kind of have fun with it. But I think you're going to have more fun if you do enjoy the genre. So
just going back to one scene that I forgot to call out was after Sammy has killed Peter and she's calling in Joey and Frank on the radio. And then she hears them in the room behind her and she's like actively trying to not smile or laugh as she's facing away from them. And she's just saying things like, oh, no, oh, no.
I know.
I loved that performance from Catherine Newton. That was, man, if Lisa Frankenstein had way more of that, I would have been a bigger fan of that film. But
well, and honestly, that's kind of what I was thinking, because watching her in this, like, she does such a great job on every level, just in sort of the comedy piece, and her timing is fantastic. So again, it's like, it's to do with the script. I think it's to do with the cast and the direction. And this was honestly a little bit of the tone that this set was more of what I was expecting in Lisa Frankenstein. And it wasn't that. So this, I think it's really hard to walk these lines. And I think that they did a really great job doing it. And I honestly, I hope people go and see it. I think it seems like it's getting kind of like a pretty good momentum in terms of people, you know, reviewing it and going to see it. It had like a budget of $28 million. And I think the box office when last we checked was around 15 million or so.
Well, as of right now, it's 18.
Oh, is it 18? So, you know, maybe they're going to, I think they'll be okay. But, and this also strikes me as something that's going to be a little bit of a culty thing that people really, when it gets to streaming and things like that, I bet it will take off even more. So anyway, thoroughly enjoyed it. We happened to see it on the same night, which was kind of funny.
Yeah. Just me like 4 hours after you. It's got 83% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is legit. And 86 is the audience score, but 83 from critics is good. And, you know, I don't think this movie needs to reinvent anything. It does a good job of the genre that it's in, and it does defy some tropes and other ones it leans into. And I think that that's great.
Agree. So what are we talking about next time?
Who even knows? But it's going to be probably something about the undead, or
could be something about the undead. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly undead. So let us know what you thought of Abigail, if you've had a look at it. If you haven't, well, we just spoiled the whole plot, so I hope that you stop listening as soon as that became apparent. But let us know what you thought of listening or what you thought of Abigail. You can email us at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com and you can listen and find all of our other episodes online at reanimated.podbean.com.
And thank you all for listening. We're really grateful for it. And stay tuned until next time. Ciao.
Alrighty. Bye.